Well, today I'm going to give a sermon I haven't given for quite a while in this area. It's called The Hard Way, The Hard Way. On this last day of unleavened bread is a story really of Israel that are leaving Egypt on this day. It wasn't an easy road for them to leave Egypt. The tests were along the way as they were marching out of the area of Goshen. And it was a hard way. And this was about the year 1446 BC or thereabouts, when Israel camped opposite Baal Zephon by the Red Sea. That's about 150 miles into the Exodus, with perhaps as many as 3 million Israelites, men, women, and children. But they were not yet fully out of Egypt. Remember, this is over these last 7 days, they have been starting to come out of Egypt. The Bible maps really don't do a very good job of showing the route that they took, possibly because they didn't know. They just guessed. But if you're familiar with the Bible map, you can see there were various routes that they took that you could take to come out of Egypt to go over to Canaan and to other parts of the Middle East. Well, God led Israel through a most difficult terrain, and he brought them to the edge of the sea that today we call the Gulf of Aqaba, but it was part of the Red Sea. The Gulf of Aqaba is a finger of water from the Red Sea that is between the Sinai Peninsula and Arabia. And God led them to this position where they had mountains on either side of them, and the Egyptian army at their back, and the sea in front of them. He purposely led them that way to really see that he was still with them when he was about to create the miracle of the parting of the Red Sea. Let's look in Exodus 14 and just see a part of this. Exodus 14. I just need to get to the right book. And we'll begin in verse 1. Now the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Hahiroth between Migdol and the sea, opposite Baal Zephon. You shall camp before it by the sea." So Baal Zephon was on the other side of the Red Sea. "For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, 'They are bewildered by the land, and the wilderness has closed them in.' Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them, and I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over all the army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord." And they did so. Drop down to verse 10 now. "And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord." You know, they had cried out to him along the path they were trotting these last 7 days, because it was a hard journey. And when you figure 150 miles, if you were traveling 2.5 miles an hour walking, you can cover 20 miles a day without too much difficulty. You know, they were strong people. So it'd be easy to see how they can cover 150 miles in a week. In verse 11, "And then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, you have taken us away to die in the wilderness. Why have you dealt so with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. Now, this is Moses now stepping in, and he said, and stepping up to the plate. And he said to the people, do not be afraid, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. Now, we know that story. An east wind blew all that night and parted the Red Sea. And they have actually found that actual spot where they went across. There was a reef there that had grown up, that when the east wind came and parted those waters side to side, there was dry ground to pass over. It wasn't like it was 400, 500, 600 feet deep at that stage of the Red Sea. It was in the Gulf of Aqaba. And they have actually found a pylon there commemorating the Israelites crossing that area. I believe that the Egyptians took it down on their side of the Red Sea, but there still is a pylon on the other side of the Red Sea where very few people ever get to mark that incident where they went across as a memorial, so to speak. So it wasn't an easy road for them, not at all. I know many in the church feel that whenever we speak about doing things the hard way or the tribulation that may be coming upon us sooner than we may think, don't want to really hear that. But do you think that Jesus Christ wanted to particularly hear that he was going to suffer an agonizing death for us? You know, he asked his Father, our Father, to let this cup pass from him, if at all possible. And God said, no, it can't. We can't do it that way. So he gave us that example. He went through the hard way. His disciples went through the hard way. All his apostles were martyred, with the exception of John, who still was put into a vat of boiling oil, according to the commentaries on it, and he came out unharmed. But they still had to go through a great deal of difficulty to get to that part. How about us today? The story goes that one day a woman called her pastor, and she said, it's just gotten too hard. I can't handle it anymore. And then she quit. Have you ever felt like quitting? Like this woman did? How about those of you who go to school? I don't know if you get any persecution there. I haven't heard much of that, but there have been incidents where our children have gone to school, and because of our beliefs, they very well may have been persecuted, so that it didn't really make them too anxious to go to school every day. How about your job? How many times do you have to tell a boss or a new boss that you can't be here because of a holiday? Or you have to have the Sabbath off, realizing that they very well could fire you for that. Maybe even it's your marriage that has caused a problem. You know, maybe it's just gotten too hard for us to manage it. You know, the pastor's response was, well, it's supposed to be hard. If it were easy, everyone would be doing it. It's the hardness that makes it great. Think back once again to the children of Israel when they had already crossed. the Red Sea, and even prior to it, when they came to Mara on the Sinai Peninsula, and they didn't have water. And the water they found there at this oasis was bitter. And God just told Moses to take a branch from one of the trees and to cast it in the waters, and the water was made sweet. But how many times did water really enter into the picture? Because they were in a dry climate. There was the time that Moses had to strike the rock because of the murmuring of the people of Israel in order to give not only them but their cattle the water they needed. And then there was the time that God told Moses to speak to the rock. And he was so ticked off at the Israelites, he forgot that part. And he struck the rock again with his staff. Water did come out. But because of that, because he did not really give God the honor and the glory for the water coming out of the rock by speaking to it as God told him to do, he was not allowed to come into the promised land. We had the incident of the golden calf, where Moses went up into the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. I don't know how many of you realize it, but you know that mountain, Mount Horeb, was probably pushing maybe a half a mile high, and Moses at this time was already well over 80 years old. I would hate to have to think that I had to climb a mountain like that. He did it several times, if you remember. He went up and down, and finally after the golden calf incident, he went back up again. You talk about having stamina and strength, he surely did have it, and God blessed him with that. But it was a hard thing for him to do, too. And when the spies went out and brought back a false report, you know, they forgot about the miracles that God performed before them in Egypt. And all along the way, they were approaching the promised land. They forgot it. They just said, it's gotten too hard. Well, today we're going to learn about the hard way, not by the school of hard knocks or even experience, but by doing a hard thing. We're going to take on a challenge, just like the Israelites. We're going to take on a challenge. But really, they had no excuse, because in verse 13 of Exodus 14, and Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today." You know, God will do the same thing for us. And many of you have experienced this in some of the trials that you have gone through. Yes, it's a hard road, but we're going to work with integrity and determination to show it's worth it. It's worth doing what we're doing in this lifetime to be in God's kingdom. We can look at the example of a triathlon athlete. You know, it kind of boggles your mind in a way. The three things they do, I believe, is swimming, biking, and running, you know, fairly long distances. And I think it's one after another they've got to do this. And they certainly have to train to do it. They have to discipline their bodies. It's a difficult challenge. And just when you think they're done and they're training, they might reach into a bag and pull out some weights and put them on their legs and on their hands to make it even more difficult to do the job, because they realize if they stress themselves out to that point, they're going to be better off when the day comes along that they actually are in the race. We have sung songs and hymns. In fact, I think at least two of them this morning talks about the tests and trials that we go through in our lives. I mean, do we sing them and pass over what we have sung and say, well, yeah, that was for them? you know, I like to lead an easy life. I like to go ahead and just lead my life, do my work, retire, go down to Florida for the winter, and one day die, and then God sends Jesus Christ back one day, and hey, voila, I'm in the kingdom of God. That's not the hard way, is it? Because most of the time, it's not going to work that way. We have yet to see the persecution to come upon the church. We have yet to see people that may be martyred. We have yet to see people thrown in prison. But God said He would be with us through all this if we would only have faith in Him. Turn with me to Mark, the 8th chapter. Mark 8. Some words from Jesus Christ. And just one verse, verse 34. And when he had called the people to him with his disciples also, he said to them, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. Jesus Christ is not outlining here that this would be an easy thing to do. He took up his cross. We must take up our cross too along the way. Our Lord did it the hard way for the whole world, not just for us and his church, for everyone in the world today, and whoever has been and whoever will be. There's a bumper sticker that says, life is hard and then you die. I guess that's a truism. For many people, life is hard. Reminds me to ask you to pray for Lee Robinson. Lee and Francis are not here today because they had an operation around his eyes for cancer, to remove cancer. And he had to go to a plastic surgeon to patch up that area of his eye. And we need to consider the faithfulness of Lee and Francis. Certainly pray for them. And it's not an easy thing for him to do, or for Francis either, for that matter. He is certainly going through a hard trial at this time. You know, we see our goal in the distance. Our goal is to be in the kingdom and family of God. And we look for God's kingdom to come. And all the signs indicate that it's coming a lot quicker than we might even think. So we had better be making ourselves ready. The saddest thing to see is someone or a group not make it into eternal life because they haven't made it tough enough upon themselves. Not that you have to go out and look for trials, but go back to Matthew 7, once again, verses we know. And once again, Jesus Christ speaking to us in verses 13 and 14. He said, enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. This we know. Those who want to take the easy way. But then he goes on and says, because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life. But notice there are few that find it. Few. And that includes us in God's church as well. If we want to choose the easy way, the chances are we're not going to be included in those that go through that gate when he returns to this earth. You know, this way has got to be a burning fire that lies within us. We know that life is hard. Therefore, we must have a formula for success. And it's free. It's within our grasp. We can achieve goals both here and hereafter, in this lifetime and after it, when we understand this. Many come from hard backgrounds, past or present. Those of us who are older in this congregation have already gone through one Great Depression back in the 30s. And in a sense, we are in a Great Depression, or at least the beginning of one right now. And it has placed an indelible mark on those of us who have gone through one depression already. We were not too young that we forgot what we went through back then. It was difficult. It was a hard way. I know that I was born in 1931, and the Depression lasted pretty much throughout the 30s. And it really didn't bother me all that much because I thought this is the way it should be. I didn't know any better. When my father didn't have a job, we had to live with our grandparents. And that was fine too, because my grandfather had a job in a steel mill. So we didn't miss any meals. But there were people that were selling apples on the street corners, and there were soup lines, as they call it, for those who were hungry. They didn't have all the welfare we have today. You know, we had to help each other back then. And believe me, the government is going to, and if they have not already, run out of the funds to be able to do this much longer. So the message today is for all of us to see what's happening in the world. We see the news of what's happening in North Africa. Right now, Libya comes to mind. We just had Egypt. We've had our problems with Iraq and our problems with Iran. We have our problems with Lebanon. Syria is in revolt. Bahrain is in revolt. Yemen is in revolt. The whole Middle East is on fire. And I can't help but think, I don't know about you, about the King of the South. Does this mean the King of the South is coming together? Very well could be. Remember, all these people who were in charge were put there by the government of the United States to rule over their countries. Those people that are revolting in right now say, hey, we don't want these people here to do that. How dare you just name a family and say, you know, he's your leader, without us having any say-so in it. And it's not going to turn out good. It will not turn out good. Each day we see that it's getting worse and worse as far as North Africa is concerned. The Japanese just went through a terrible earthquake and a tsunami, which even affected us here, considering the Japanese auto plants that rely upon the spare parts that come from Japan, and these plants had to shut down. And the lives, they're still searching for dead along the seashore. How about the American economy itself? You know, it's really a zombie economy when you get to it. Technically, our economy is dead, simply because we can't pay our debts. Now, if you and I had a printing press in our house and we could print money and people would accept it, we'd say, hey, what's the big deal? I'll just print myself a few hundred dollars here and go on out to Kroger's and buy my groceries. It's not going to work after a while. Inflation's going to set in. and you can bring a wheelbarrow, a load of $100 bills, and it may not buy you anything. Sometimes the greatest accomplishments that we make in this life against insurmountable odds are achieved by hardship. I told a story several years ago about how the Brooklyn Bridge was built. A man by the name of John Roebling had a vision. He wanted to connect the island of Manhattan to Brooklyn up there in New York. The only way that you can get across from Brooklyn to Manhattan and vice versa was by ferry boat. There was no bridge there. They had no means really of building a bridge. So he decided he was going to build a suspension bridge. This is back in 1872. And he started the first wire rope factory in the United States, and he went to the city fathers and he convinced them, hey, this is an idea that we should follow through on. You ought to give permission for us to build this bridge so we can have that access back and forth. But Mr. Roebling died of tetanus when his foot was crushed making surveys on the waterfront. He was an engineer. Apparently he got too close to a ferry boat and got his leg crushed between that and the dock and caught tetanus and died. But his son Washington was also a civil engineer, and he became the chief engineer after his father's death. And during construction of the bridge foundations, he was stricken with caisson disease, which made him invalid. What's caisson disease? That's the bends. Because when they were building the foundation for the bridges, you had to use divers to go down into the water to guide the materials that went down there. And if you came up too rapidly, I believe you got hydrogen in your bloodstream and you got what they call the bends. And that's what happened to him. So he made him an invalid. We had about 20 men that died during the construction of this bridge. And Washington Roebling directed the completion of the bridge from his sick room out of his apartment window with a pair of field glasses as they were building the bridge right across the way. And his wife, Emily, relayed his instructions to workers every day until the bridge was completed. And that took 11 years. This is before telephones, before cell phones, obviously, before computers, before any modern thing that we just take for granted today. The man looking through a pair of field glasses, directing his workers there, giving that message to his wife, who went to those workers to relay what they needed to be doing for 11 years. Well, this was such an accomplishment that they made a plaque in honor of her contribution, and it was placed on the bridge. It was known back then as the Eighth Wonder of the World, and it was completed in the year 1883. It was 1,595 feet long, about a third of a mile. Well, the Roeblings knew the hard way, and certainly they followed through with what they were supposed to do. Let's look at some examples in the Bible. First Samuel 17. About David, King David, way before he was ever made king. We'll begin in verse 32. This had to do with the Goliath incident. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go out and fight with this Philistine." A teenager. He's probably 17, 18 years old. The army of Israel said, "No way I'm going to go out there against that guy. He's about 10 foot tall." and I'm not going to do hand-to-hand combat with him. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. He was trained how to use his spear and his sword. And David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it. Can you imagine any of us doing that? A lion or a bear taking a lamb out of the flock and chase after it to take it back from it? And I delivered the lamb from its mouth, and when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing that he has defied the armies of the living God. And moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And so Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. That was the hard way. As we know the story of David, he had many hard ways that he had to encounter in his life. But he overcame. I guess you can ask yourself the question, well, can anyone be a shepherd? It's not such a hard job, is it? Well, back there it was. Some of us face lions and bears every day in our lives, not actual ones. It's called the hard way. The hard way teaches us to slay our lions and our bears, figuratively speaking. Let's look at another example in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians. In chapter 10. Sorry, 1 Corinthians. I didn't think that looked right. Chapter 10. You better make up your mind which chapter you're in, son. Because I do have 1 Corinthians here, but that's down a little bit. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians 11. Maybe that's why I didn't see what I was supposed to see. And here I just had cataract surgery a few months ago. You think I'd do better than this, wouldn't you? And let's pick it up in verse 1 of chapter 11. Paul says, oh, that you would bear with me in a little folly, and indeed you do bear with me. And dropping down now to verse 14, and no wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. In verse 22, these are those false ministers who were teaching the Corinthians the wrong way to go. And in verse 22 says, are they Hebrews? Those who are doing the teaching. He says, so am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Remember the hard way Abraham had, as Mr. Shelton brought out on the Sabbath, about having to sacrifice his son Isaac. Was that easy for him? I'm sure it was very hard for him. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more in labors, more abundant, in stripes above measure. This was not speaking about clothing he wore with stripes on it. This is the stripes laid on his body. In prisons, more frequently, in deaths from the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes, minus one. These are the stripes he's speaking of. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned, and once was usually enough. 3 times I was shipwrecked, a night and a day. I have been in the deep, floating around in the ocean. In journeys often, in perils of waters, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things, what comes upon me daily. Just the other normal tests and trials that he would go through. My deep concern is for all the churches. Who is weak and I am not weak? Who is made to stumble and I do not burn with indignation? If I must boast, I will boast in the things which concern my infirmity. Just think of all he went through. A very difficult road for him to have to go through. You know, it might be up for us. It might be hard just to get up in the morning to go to school and go to work, which you might have to face there. But why would we want to do it the hard way anyway? Let me give you four reasons. While you're doing this, let's look at 1 Peter. Turn there. And the first reason is you have to learn the hard way. We have to learn it. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. You know, Peter is telling us right now. These hard trials that we're going through, this is nothing unusual. But rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. Yeah, there will be joy at the end of this hard road that we're on. And we will have to do some suffering. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rests upon you. On their part, he is blasphemed, but on your part, he is glorified. And let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Mind our own business. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter. For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God, and the time is now here. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? You know, our path has been laid before us. Without having to turn there, we remember 1 Corinthians 10:13, that God will not test us beyond our strength. A promise. Now, maybe the way out is not something you might want. Maybe the way out is death. I don't know. But God said he will not test us beyond our strength, no matter what test or trial that we may be going through. Sooner or later, we're going to have trials in our lives. We may not want to hear that, but we must accept them. It happened to me and my wife when we first came in the church. I remember we were in a church for about 5 years, and I saw all my brethren around me, not all of them, but many of them, having trials. And I said to a deacon one day, hey, how come they're having their trials and I'm not having one? He said, let me give you a piece of advice. Don't pray for one, because God will give it to you. He knows when you can take a trial on. And it was shortly thereafter I lost my job. I was working with the Kroger Company as an industrial engineer for about 12 years. Liked my job. It was a good job. And as I mentioned earlier, how many times do you have to go to your boss and say you can't work on the Sabbath? You know, you figure out if you only have one boss and he agrees that there's no problem with that, well, you're probably cool don't have to worry about it. But what happens when somebody takes his place and somebody takes his place? Somewhere down the line, one of them's going to say, I'm sorry, but I don't go along with that. Well, one day that came along. But God was good to me in that. I received, was it a year's severance, Sonny? You remember? I don't know. Year's severance pay. And was out of work that time. Couldn't find a job. And it was a difficult time because our kids were in high school and going to college. And we still wanted them to go and do what they were looking forward to doing. In fact, I lost many jobs along the way. I mean, that was because of the Sabbath. I lost jobs because of companies were cutting back because of the economy. Some of you have lost jobs for that reason. I've lost jobs because of company mergers. Had nothing to do with the quality of my work. But God was allowing me to go through these trials one by one by one to test me. The second time I lost my job, I was out of work for 2 years. And I thought to myself at the time, Father, if you want me to really be without work, and I accept that until the time of Christ returns, if that's what you want me to do. I even fasted for 3 days. I don't recommend that to everybody who wants to do it, but once you make up your mind to do it, it can be done. And eventually God allowed me to find another job. And even for some of those, I lost the job too because of other reasons. It's like putting, you know, you got the potter in the clay. The potter is making us into what he wants us to be. He puts us in the fire. And if he wants to put ornaments on us to make us even better than we can think we'll ever be, that's God's privilege to do that as well. So we've handled our past trials with God's help. But now God gave us a mountain to climb with our daughter Lynn, who, as many of you know, is in prison. And I do want to thank you for your prayers for her. She's going to need all the help she can get there. She's not at her trial yet. You know, some may ask, well, how are me and my wife handling this? As far as we're concerned, she is in God's hands. We know she is. We know God that will protect her. He will watch over her. And when the time is right, she will come out of prison. And God will open up her mind to see her truth, and she will be in God's kingdom as we hope to be as well. The second reason we are to look at the hard way, challenges are fun. You may think, that sound like a lot of fun to me. Take a risk. Try something new. Try a new challenge. Start a business. That's finally what I did. Started a new business. And it was a challenge. And I wish I would have ran across this years before. Because God really gave me a blessing in that regard when I did start my business. You have to strap on some extra weights on you to do this. But life is not easy. The boring way is easy. But the hard way is fun, if you look at it that way. A third reason we should take on challenges, hard challenges, take on trials, is to enhance your feeling of control. How do you think David felt? Do you think he felt he was in control of his situation? Obviously, he felt that way. He said he could handle Goliath, couldn't he? If I can handle a lion or a bear, I can take care of that turkey out there without any problem. And he did. He was proactive with the lion, the bear, and Goliath. He had an attitude of control, and when you have an attitude of control, there are greater rewards for it. Turn with me to Galatians now, the sixth chapter. Galatians 6. And in verse 7. Verse 7. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing well, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. In due season. It's not going to happen right away. At the resurrection. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially of those of the household of faith. Rewards will come to you. We need to influence someone else so they may be able to get rewards too by giving them encouragement. A fourth reason, encouragement helps self-respect. It gives us self-respect. A brave man dies once, a coward dies 1,000 times. Growth is enjoyable. Pain makes you what you want to be. Be as great as you can. What's the old adage? And when you go to the gym to work out, no pain, no gain. When I go to the Y and I see some of these people grunting and groaning, they're in pain. I'm too old for that. I only want to go there to work out, not to kill myself. I'm already pushing 80. And I would rather do it my way than to do it their way. What is the hard way? Four simple steps to develop character for a hard way. Number one is understanding. We need to understand why we have trials, why life is hard. Changes are hard in our lives. We need to find a better way and change. We need to build our bridge like the Roblings did. We need to slay our lions like David did. Deuteronomy 8. Deuteronomy 8. And let's look at verses 1 and 2. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land in which the Lord swore to your fathers. If we're going to possess our place in God's kingdom, we have to be obedient to God. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness. It's been about 40 years for me in the wilderness. We came into the church when I was about 40. Why? To humble you, to test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. You're going to be fired if you work on the Sabbath. Fine. You're going to be fired if you don't keep the holy days. That's the way it is. But God will always be there for us to help us through it. He wants to test our mettle. That's M-E-T-T-L-E. Your mettle is great when tested by trials. In the steel mill, there is a temper mill that rolls coiled steel cold. It's called an annealing process. It's to toughen the steel to make it even stronger by hardship. In verse 3 of Deuteronomy 8, it says, "So he humbled you, allowed you to hunger, and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord." And that's what we are supposed to do. Very few of people understand that. The second way to develop character in regard to hardships is belief, not just faith. You can succeed in your will. What the mind conceives, it can accomplish. If you believe it, you can accomplish it. You must believe to attain the kingdom of God. If you believe it, it creates excitement, it creates optimism in your life. If you don't, the opposite happens. Discouragement enters in. How many of you remember the song Frankie Lane sang? Probably not anybody that's a lot younger than I am. "Lord, this time you gave me a mountain." What a song. If you ever get a chance to hear it, or if you ever heard the words, I can go through it today, but I don't have the time right now. This is a man crying out to God that he'd been through many trials in his life. But because he lost his baby boy, that to him was a mountain. Turn with me to Deuteronomy 31 now. And beginning in verse 1. Moses went and spoke these words to all of Israel, and he said to them, "I am 120 years old today." How about that? He must have been keeping track of his birthday. 120 years old today, he said. I never saw that before. "I can no longer go out and come in. Also, the Lord has said to me, 'You shall not cross over this Jordan,'" because of what he did of hitting the rock instead of striking the rock instead of speaking to it. "The Lord your God himself crosses over before you. He will destroy these nations from before you, and you shall dispossess them. Joshua himself crosses over before you, just as the Lord has said, and the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings of the Amorites, and their land when he destroyed them. And the Lord will give them over to you, that you may do to them according to every commandment which I have commanded you." And then he says, "Be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them, for the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you." And that's the attitude we have as far as our trials are concerned. Mark, the 9th chapter. Beginning in verse 17. "Then one from the multitude answered and said, 'Teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. And wherever he seizes him, he throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. So I spoke to your disciples, and they could not cast him out.' And he answered and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me. And when he brought him to him and he saw him, he immediately, the spirit convulsed him, and he was thrown to the ground and wallowed, foaming at the mouth. And he asked his father, how long has this been happening to him? And he said, from childhood. And dropping down to verse 23, Jesus said to him, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. And then the answer, which really applies to us, the man's father cried out and said to Jesus, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. That's the authority we have from God himself. A third area are skills. Life is just not to endure, just endure. The Ethiopian eunuch was willing to learn. And we must learn too, especially when it comes to trials. The fourth area is action. Success comes to those who try. I'm skipping through these because we're running close on time. What the scriptures tell us? Be doers of the word, not hearers only. To come and listen to a sermon or any message that God's ministers give and say, that was a nice message. And if it did apply to you, and something generally does, if that's all the further it goes, then all we are hearers of the word and not doers of the word. So that's pretty much it as far as learning the hard way is concerned. The four steps are understanding why we have trials, belief that we can succeed to whatever trial God puts us through, we're willing to learn the skills we need to have to come out of the trial, and then the last step is action, to do something about it. So which way will it be? The easy way or the hard way? Remember the route that God had Israel take out of Egypt. It was a hard way through the wilderness. Remember the words of the poet Robert Frost, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the road less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. Remember, it's supposed to be hard, otherwise everyone will be doing it. It's the hardness that makes it great.